This is the December 2012 edition of The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. This month, we're looking back at highlights of this program over the past year. In June, Dallas Mavericks owner and television personality Mark Cuban took to his blog in order to voice some concerns with regard to the amount of debt with which today's college students graduate and to question the cost-value proposition that higher education offers.
Mr. Cuban hit on a point that I think all of us in higher education are concerned about, and that is the mounting student debt load. And I'm sure that he quoted some of these numbers in his blog, but they're common knowledge. I mean, we read about this virtually every day. Student debt load is approaching $1 trillion. It's now bypassed credit card debt in this nation in terms of just its sheer bulk.
Right.
And Mr. Cuban uses the term that we are coming up on what he calls a student debt bubble, and he equates that to being similar to the housing bubble, or a few years before that, the tech bubble. And that's actually an analogy I've used in describing this situation. Students are graduating with unprecedented amounts of debt, and it's something that we are going to have to get a handle on. And when I say we, I'm talking about the big corporate we. We in higher education obviously need to confront this issue head on, but this is an issue that surpasses the boundaries of the university campus. This is a societal issue, and this is something that I think that all of us, our elected officials, of course, need to be cognizant of the problem. We need to look at the way we provide higher education. Are we achieving all the efficiencies that we can and trying to control costs? But a larger question that I think that we have to deal with as a society is, what is the value back to the society of having a high percentage of our citizens with a college degree? And let's ask that question with a hard edge. What is that value? President Obama has set a very ambitious goal. He wants to get a college attainment rate up to 60%. Well, that would be a historic high for this nation. We're hovering in the 30s right now. And we think, well, gosh, what's it going to take to get there? Well, other OECD countries, developed industrialized nations, are already there. The United States is lagging behind Finland. It's lagging behind Korea, Norway. I mean, there's a lot of places that are ahead of the United States in terms of college attainment that you wouldn't necessarily think of as being our competitors. And by the way, that's a fairly recent phenomenon. As recently as the 90s, the U.S. led the world in college attainment. So we've slipped from first to about, I don't have the exact numbers, somewhere 11th or 12th in the world, within the span of a little over a decade. So the world is changing. The world is changing in pretty profound ways. And Fareed Zakaria, who is the CNN commentator, who has a really bright guy and has a really global perspective on this, he calls this not the fall of the West, but the rise of the rest. And I think that's a very apt way of saying it. This may not be something where the United States is doing something wrong, but it may be an instance where other nations are doing something right. We may have to look at what the rest of the world is doing with a little more humility. But let me circle back to Mr. Cuban's blog, because the point he is raising about student debt is an important one, and it ties into these larger questions about the value of a college education. One of the statistics that you'll hear is that the cost of a college education to the consumer, the student and the family, has risen faster than the rate of inflation in this country. It has risen faster than even the cost of health care in this country. It certainly outpaced the CPI, the Consumer Price Index.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You look back 15 years worth of data, all that's true. And then sometimes an additional fact is ladled on top, which is that the cost of tuition in the United States is higher than any other industrialized nation. Now, I haven't tracked that down, but I don't question that factoid. What accounts for all of that stuff? In fact, if you look at higher education and the funding patterns of higher education in the United States in the last 15 to 20 years, what we have seen, and I'm going to try to do this without putting value terms on this, but it's difficult for me to do because I'm an educator and I've spent my life in colleges and universities, and I love them and I love what I do. But there has been, in the last 20 years in the United States, a massive public disinvestment in higher education. What I mean by that is that public support for higher education has gone down systematically and irretrievably in the last 20 years. In the state of Texas, it began in 2003 when tuition was deregulated, and basically the deal that was made in Texas is the legislature said to the universities, if you'll stop asking us for money, we'll let you set your tuition at whatever you want. Well, it was kind of a deal with the devil, because basically that means, okay, next year you're going to get 10% less from the state. In order to maintain the cost of doing business, we're going to have to raise tuition. That's been going on for a decade in Texas. It's been going on for longer than that in other states in the nation. So what you've seen here is a shifting in terms of cultural value, and it ties into lots of other things. What is the role of government? What we've seen in the United States is an increasing preponderance of the view that the cost of higher education should be borne by the student and his or her family, because that's where the benefit is going. It should be borne proportionately less by society as a whole. Again, that's a topic for another show. If we want to arm wrestle on that one. One of the points that he makes, the charges that he makes, and it merits a response, is that the cost of tuition is being driven up by the ease of securing student loans. And I think that there's some merit to that argument. Let me tell you why. And I use healthcare as an analogy. You know, if you look at the rising cost of healthcare in this country, it started to inch upward, and then it began to more than inch, explode with Medicaid and Medicare. Now the government's paying for it. What do I care what healthcare costs? Now, I'm not making that argument, but I'm saying that argument has been made, and you can make that argument for higher education. If it's easy for me, 18-year-old high school graduate getting ready to go to college, easy for me to get a student loan, what do I care how much my education pays? The government's lending me the money, and I'll pay that back later.
Right. It sounds like this is an argument to put on the government, the mindset of an 18-year-old, as opposed to somebody who's 21 or 22 and now has to actually be responsible for that.
Exactly. So I think that some of the pressures that consumers would ordinarily bring to bear on the marketplace of higher education have been removed by the ease of access to government funding. So I'm going to concede that point up front. However, what does that mean for us in public institutions of higher education? It means two things. It means, first of all, that we need to be right there on the edge of innovation. We need to be leading the charge in finding efficient and effective and high-quality ways of delivering education that students can afford. He talks about online education. A&M Commerce, we deliver a third of our education online or in some form of distance delivery. We're among the top universities in the state of Texas in doing that. So it's important for us to innovate. We can't leave that to the proprietary schools. The other piece of advice that we give ourselves and then we pass on to our students, and that is be smart consumers, because there is good value in the educational marketplace, but you got to go find it. Most of the problem that we're seeing in student debt is from students going to proprietary schools or private institutions with big price tags. There was an article in the New York Times a few weeks ago about a young lady who was graduating from a private university in Ohio, a good institution, by the way. No aspersions on the quality of the institution.
Right.
Traditional, liberal arts, small, I think it was a church-affiliated institution. Those are wonderful places to get a college education, but they're expensive.
Right.
Okay, $40,000 a year, $50,000 a year. She graduates in 4 years. She's got $120,000 in student debt. And she said, nobody told me about this when I came in. She was not a smart consumer, but on the other hand, she did not get good advice. You realize when you take these loans, you're going to have to pay them back. That's what we need to be telling our students. Those of us in public education, public higher education, and there are still tremendous values in public higher education. Go to a community college, get as many credits as you can, make sure they transfer, make sure they count towards your degree. Come to a place like A&M Commerce. We're working on a $10,000 degree total, 4 years, and we're going to get there. That's a tremendous value in higher education. But you've got to be a smart consumer. You got to go find them. It has nothing.
And even at that age.
Yes, even at that age. When we're looking for cars or TVs, we don't necessarily go in and say, I'm going to buy the most expensive one in the showroom. That's not how we think when we're going in. We go in looking for value. And we need to train our students before they get to the front door of the college admissions office, look for value, and they'll find it. They just need to be good consumers,
right?
You know, because ultimately they're purchasing a service. And the point is that in the marketplace of higher education, you can find good value. you don't have to take every loan that you're eligible for, and make sure that the dollars you borrow are dollars that you can pay back. I think Mr. Cuban makes a lot of great points in his blog, and I appreciate the fact that he is bringing these topics to the table for public discussion.
That conversation again from last June in response to a blog post by Dallas billionaire Mark Cuban. As we wrap up another year of The President's Perspective, I'd like to remind you that you can listen to the latest episodes of this program anytime you like by seeking out the online archives at ketr.org. The President's Perspective is heard on the first Wednesday of each month at noon and again at 5 p.m. The program is produced at KETR's recording studios in Binion Hall on the campus of Texas A&M University Commerce. KETR is member-supported radio for Northeast Texas, and we look forward to continuing discussions with Dr. Jones on this program next year.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones, president of Texas A&M University Commerce and an avid listener and member of 88.9 KETR. You know, if you listen to this station just an hour a day, you spent the equivalent of 15 days listening to KETR in 2012. Chances are you spent a lot more time with the station than that. Have you helped pay for all of that listening? We count on listener contributions to keep KETR on the air. A gift from you today helps us do just that. It's tax deductible and it's easy to do when you contribute online at ketr.org. That's ketr.org, and just click support this station. Thanks.
This has been The President's Perspective on your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.